Since we have looked at what a genuine Christian is, we're going to, that ended last week, so we're going to begin talking about something different. And we're going to be talking about prophecy. And my purpose in giving this sermon and the others that will follow, and you're probably thinking, oh no, another series? Well, it's only going to be three long, so anyway. But I thought we're coming up on the holy days, so it might be of value to talk about some things that are prophetic and focus on that for a while. And so this, the title of this sermon is Keys to Prophecy, and this will be part one. And I'm passing along these prophetic keys so that you can have them as a personal resource. And you can use the tools that I will be providing for you in order to evaluate what is what's unfolding in the world prophetically. Because as we look at the world, history and various things are unfolding. I mean, you hear that the Chinese threatened the Japanese today. You have the Chinese wanting to move and take over Taiwan. You have all sorts of things going on in this world that creates an uncertain world. And as you look at all of those things, what do they tell us about where we are in prophecy? And so we'll talk about that. And as you think about that, you know, do we have the tools that help us to understand what prophecy is all about and where we're at? Part of my responsibility as a minister here in Houston is to help you as a congregation to become well-grounded in the truths of the Bible. So, you know, each week we seek to focus upon the truths of the Bible, and we seek to help everybody understand those truths and to be able to take those truths and apply them in their lives. And so that's been part of my responsibility. I do want you to be well grounded in biblical truth, because it's going to produce stability in the faith. So as we begin to talk about this, let's go to the book of Ephesians chapter 4 and look at verse 14. And we want to be stable in the faith, and this particular verse talks about stability, and as part of that, it talks about how we can be unstable. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 14. And there it says that we should no longer be children, that we should no longer be children tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine by the trickery of men in the cunning craftiness of deceitful plotting. So we live in a world where people, when you look at the Bible, are tossed to and fro. People, you have every imagined stance on what the Bible is saying and what people believe. And you have people going back and forth, and people don't have stability in their beliefs because they don't exactly understand how it all fits together. Or people think they know how it fits together, but in reality, they may not have it right. But it tells us that we should no longer be children. And what indicates that we are children? What indicates that we are children in that verse is being tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine. And that's how most people are. They don't know what the truths of the Bible are, and as they have certain ideas about them, and so you have things going every which way, and it's easy to be blown back and forth because of a lack of understanding. So as you look at prophecy, it's something that we are to be stable in. Not that we understand everything, but we understand enough to where we're stable and we're not blown about with every wind of doctrine. And we are no longer children, but we are mature. We have an understanding of certain basics that allow us to withstand the wind when it comes, and it most assuredly will come. So, as you think about this verse, who is responsible to deal with this blowing wind that blows people back and forth? Who did God give responsibility to help people in coping with that? We see that spoken of in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 11. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 11. It says, speaking of Jesus Christ, he's the he in this verse. It says, he himself gave some to be apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, and some pastors and teachers. So I fit into that last category as a pastor and teacher. And for the equipping of the saints for the work of ministry, for works of service, for the edifying of the body of Christ, till we all come to the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to a perfect man, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. Jesus Christ isn't blown about at all. Jesus Christ is always steady. He's always steady. He's not blown about. He's not doubting what's right, what's wrong, what does the Bible say or not say. He's always steady, and he wants us to learn to be steady as well. And as a minister, my responsibility is to help you to understand the truths of the Bible in a way that you can use them. And you can evaluate what's coming your way and make a wise decision about the way that you should go. So that's a part of my job, and hopefully that's a job that I can continue to carry out on into the future. So we want, as ministers, to teach you in such a way that you're going to be built up in the faith, and when the winds come, you're not going to be blown about, but you're going to withstand the winds, and you're going to be able to say, I don't think that's right. I don't think that's the truth. I think that there's something lacking there, and you're not going to be taken in. So as you think about the prophetic things going around, you know, last year we were dealing with the issue of COVID, and if you go back to that, I received emails from different people talking about COVID and about the mask and all of these kinds of things and all the controversy. This is the end of the age and all of this kind of thing. And that's always the case. No matter what goes on, you're going to hear people saying this is it. And they're going to become worried about it, concerned about it, and try to tie it in with prophecy. If you remember back to 9/11, there was an upsurge in people who thought, I better get my act together because Christ is going to come back soon. Well, when those buildings fell, they thought, ooh, this is serious. And people got serious for at least a day or two or maybe a few weeks, but they didn't permanently get serious. But it was a serious issue, and hopefully people would say, wow, maybe I better get things together. But that's not always the way it is. And so we have to realize there's always going to be something going on where there's war or there's upheaval of some kind, and we have to be able to sort through all of that and not, we don't, every time something happens, we begin to pack our bags because we're going to the place of safety in the next day or two. Sorry, it's not going to be like that. And so we will be able to look at the signs, and we'll be able to say, I think that things are coming to an end, and when it does come to an end, we'll know. And God tells us that as we look at the scriptures, and so we have to carefully go forward. And as I said, if you look on the internet about different things going on, there's a multitude of thoughts on that, and people are wanting you to look at this and sharing that. And it may be true, it may not be true, but you can't let those things get you all stirred up. You got to be steady, and you got to say, when it's time, it'll be time, and I'll be able to discern that. For instance, I know that in dealing with some issues that we've dealt with in the past, you know, there are times when those issues come your way, and for me as a minister, I'm wondering, should I take action here? Should I keep waiting? Well, how do I deal with this? And I didn't know. So I prayed to God about it. I asked God for wisdom as how to sort through it. And eventually, something happened that made it clear this is the way to go. Now, it wasn't because I was so smart. It was because God was merciful. And God is merciful to me. He will be with you. And when you need to the answer to something in God's time and according to God's will, he'll make it clear to you. But the main thing that we're doing is we're going to God and we're asking that he in his mercy would help us sort things out And we all face those things in our individual lives, and we face those things as the body of Christ. So a question that we might ask is, can you distinguish between the prophetically significant and the prophetically insignificant? Because there, like I said, there are all kinds of things going on, but what's something you should be concerned about, and other things that are going on, but we don't have to get all worked up about them? Are we able to discern what the answer to that is? Let's go to Matthew chapter 16. Matthew chapter 16, and I'll read these to you. If you want to turn there, you can, and follow along. If not, just make note of them, and we're going to look at verses 1 through 4. Matthew chapter 16, verses 1 through 4. There it says, "Then the Pharisees and Sadducees came, and testing him, asked that he would show them a sign from heaven." So for the Jews, especially the leadership of the Jews, they were always looking for Christ to give them a sign. "He answered and said to them, 'When it is evening, you say it will be fair weather, for the sky is red. And in the morning, it will be foul weather, for the sky is red and threatening.' Hypocrites,' he says, 'you know how to discern the face of the sky, but you cannot discern the signs of the times.'" So probably many of us are familiar with the rhyme that says, red sky in morning, sailors take warning, and red sky at night, sailors delight. Some of you have heard of that. And anyway, that Christ quotes this, and he says, this is something that you know based upon weather patterns, and when you see the red sky in the morning, you know, there's probably a system that's going to come through, and if it's red sky at night, then probably it's going to be fair weather the next day. So Christ cites this and tells them, you know how to read these signs, but you don't know how to read the signs of the times. Because the signs were right there before the Pharisees and the Sadducees, but they didn't see it. And why they didn't see it, we'll talk about that as we go through this. So he tells us that that they couldn't read the signs, but the question is, can we? Can we read the signs? So our job is to try to discern the signs of the times. Where are we at? And then be able to discern them. And if we can discern them, then to take the appropriate action, to respect them and what they're telling us. Just as God put in place a red sky in the morning as indicative of a weather system, he's given that as a sign for people to be able to recognize the coming weather, and he's given us signs that we can look to, and as we discern them, we can see where we're at and how things are unfolding in the world around us. So God has placed signs and prophetic markers within his word. We need to be aware of them and then respect them and use them appropriately. So the Pharisees and Sadducees didn't get it. Now why? Why didn't they get it? Christ said, you can discern the signs that indicate a change in the weather. You guys can do that. And the point that Christ was making is that you can discern the signs of the times. You can discern that. And Christ was condemning them because they could see the physical signs, but when they looked at the Bible and the signs that were indicated from the Bible, they didn't see it. And the question is why? The main point is they didn't want to. The signs weren't pointing to what they believed and what they were looking for. And there were clear signs. And Christ, you know, it's kind of like Christ was there giving them the signs repeatedly, and he said, you know, this is the signal, and they're not, nope, they're shaking him off, nope, we don't want that sign, that's not what we're looking for, we don't want that. They didn't want a Savior who would come and lay down his life for the sins of mankind. They didn't want a suffering servant. From their perspective, they were being oppressed by the Romans, and they wanted this Messiah that would come and lay down his life, and lead them in overthrowing the Romans and reestablishing the kingdom of Israel. Christ said, that's not where we're at. We're not going to do that now. And they didn't like that, and they didn't like what Christ was offering to them. So that's not what they wanted. And they had their ideas about what they wanted, and if Christ wasn't going to meet that, they were not going to accept what he was offering to them. As I remember back in time, Christ is saying that you can discern the times. You can discern them because they will be there, and you can discern them and act accordingly. Now, the challenge that we face is, are we reading the signs correctly? When I came into the church, the church had been engaged in reading the signs, or what they thought were the signs. I began attending church when I started going to Ambassador College, and the leadership of the church back then believed that Jesus Christ would return in the general time period of 1975. And I would venture to say that depending on where you were at that time, you may have heard a specific date about when they believed Christ was going to return. I believe the date was September 26, 1975. So I came into the church, I didn't know anything about that, and because I was listening to a sermon that a fellow that I know in the ministry, he was at Ambassador College, and they said that, maybe not Ambassador College, he may have been in a Bible class going to the high school that they had there at Ambassador College, and he heard him specifically say it. He was going through a notebook, and there it was, right in black and white. But that didn't happen. Didn't happen like they said it was going to. So that was a disappointment, because people were looking forward to that, and some people acted in a way that they believed that that was going to be reality, and when it wasn't, they were very disappointed. When 1975 came and passed, what they had said, this is what's going to happen, didn't happen, people were disappointed because they had been looking forward to it. It's just like John Miller back in the 1800s said, Christ is going to return at this particular time. He didn't come, and a lot of people were disappointed. So what did they do? Well, they changed the date, and then they changed how it was all going to work out. And so they never got it right, and still haven't to this day. So we had to, and I think that we tried to change the date. We tried to do different, calculate it differently. Well, we missed this, and then we missed that, but we kept on calculating it. So it's not 1975, it's going to be 1982. I remember that. So, but the church overall, we had to come to the understanding that we didn't get it right and admit that we didn't get it right, and we had to move on. And, people look at our getting it wrong and they give the church leadership negative marks for that. However, if you go back to the early New Testament church, it's interesting what unfolded there. What did they believe about the return of Jesus Christ? They'd been there when Christ died. They'd been there when he was resurrected. They knew all of those things. They had seen him ascend to heaven. So what did they believe? The Apostle Paul was one of those. What did he believe as a leader in the church? Let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 51. Let's go back and look at what he believed. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 51. Here he says, behold, I tell you a mystery. We shall not all sleep. So what's he saying? I'm not going to sleep. And you as members of the church aren't going to sleep either. And why is that? He says, we shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trumpet. For the trumpet will sound and the dead will be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed. What's he saying? We're all going to be changed. Christ is going to come back. When is that going to be? It's going to be soon. They're going to change me. They're going to change you. That song would have been well received because it fit right in with what they believed. But that's what Paul And the other apostles believed. And Paul believed that until he came to the point in his life where he said, my end is near. I am not going to live to see Christ return. But that was a common belief in the church. So just as in modern times people were unhappy about that, and a lot of people said, well, he's not back, I'm out of here. That happened back in Christ in the time of Paul and the apostles as well. It's not a new phenomenon. So look what Paul had to say in 2 Timothy chapter 4. 2 Timothy chapter 4, this is when he came to realize we don't have it right. And they weren't being malicious. They were trying to discern the times. And in trying to discern the times, they could see their indications that this could be it. And then he comes to the end of his life, and he says in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 6, he says, for I am already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure is at hand. I'm not going to be alive if Christ comes in the next few years. My life is coming to an end. He said, I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Finally, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me on that day. And not to me only, but also to all who have forsaken me, having loved this present world. And so he says, he's basically wrapping things up, and he's going to tell Timothy, my life's coming to an end, and you, Timothy, are going to be one of the ones that are going to have to carry on the work of God going forward. And he talks about certain things that he wants. He talks about certain people have abandoned me. He tells Timothy to bring him the parchments and do certain things for him. And we need to continue on. It's not over. So this happened in the first century. And Christ has not come in the interim. But he is coming. And we have to be aware of that and continue forward till the last trumpet sounds. So Paul came to see that Christ was not coming back in his time, and he had to relay that to the church. I'm sure the church was disappointed at that time, just as it was in our time. To those of us who were in the ministry in the church during that time, the following scripture was put forward. So if we got it wrong, admit you're wrong, what do we do going forward? What's the approach that we need to take? In Christ, we are told by Jesus Christ in Matthew chapter 24, verses 45 and 46. So what do you do? 1975 was wrong. What do we do going forward? Well, here's the answer to that. Matthew chapter 24, verses 45 and 46. Matthew chapter 24, verses 45 and 46. It says, who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his master made ruler over his household, to them give them food in due season? It says, blessed is that servant whom his master, when he comes, will find so doing. So we have a job to do. We have a work to complete. And that work didn't end in Paul's time. It's never come to a close, and it goes on to this day. We still have a job to do. We still have a work to do. And we need to carry forward in doing that work. And what God is going to judge us on is not how correct we are on prophecy. He's going to judge us on, have we continued doing the work that he's given us to do? That's what we're going to be judged on. So that's Christ's instruction in Matthew chapter 24. And it's still an instruction that we are to continue forward with in this time. And as you look at, you had some people who became disillusioned with the church because they got it wrong, and they tried, it was not an attempt to dupe people, but it was wrong. And so we've tried to avoid predicting the return of Christ and the end of the age. We don't know. We have to take God at his word where he says, it's not for you to know the day or the time. That's what he said. So when you're trying to figure it out and try to calculate it, they weren't successful and neither are we. So don't do that. Continue what you know to do. continue to do what you know to do. So, and many in the church continue to do that. Many in the church continue to do that. So, as we need to be aware, the purpose of prophecy was never intended to be a get-out-of-jail-free card. Do any of you remember the article that said, there is a way of escape? Do you remember that article? And it said, if you're a Philadelphian, you're going to be able to escape all the disasters coming on the end of the world. I remember that, and I think we had that mindset, that if I do these things, then I will escape. But that's not what prophecy is for, to be a get-out-of-jail-free card. Well, the end came, but I got my ducks in order, so we'll all escape. No, that's not what it's for. And so that's the wrong approach to take as far as dealing with prophecy. So prophecy's purpose is that we all have problems and we have challenges, and we're on a course that we need to complete, and understanding every facet of prophecy in order that we escape the disasters at the end of the age is not what we're to be doing. We may have to face those things. So that may be a reality, but we need to be faithful to the end. And we have to realize that we're to overcome, we're to change, we're to be ready for God's kingdom, and be ready to take on the duties and the responsibilities that God is preparing us for. So as you go, you know, and some people have the mindset that, you know, there was a song years ago that some of you people familiar with, the oldies, may be familiar with, and the song is Make the World Go Away. Any of you remember that song? All the young people are like, what are you talking about? Yes, it really was a song, Make the World Go Away, and it says, get it off my shoulders. Well, the reality is we can't make the world go away, and if it's on your shoulders, then all you can do is deal with it in the way that God has instructed us to. The world isn't going to go away. It's there, it's a reality, and it seems like, you know, we've been looking forward to the end of the world for a long time, but it hasn't ended. It will end, but I'm not sure exactly when. And we may, and you know, it is kind of disconcerting in the sense, as you look at it, you may begin to think, well, you know what? This may all come to an end, and I don't think it's going to be very pleasant when we go through that. But God said, well, if you're part of those that are living in that time, what choice do you have but to, you're on the bus, you got to ride the bus till it's time to get off of it. And all of us are in that particular boat, fortunately or unfortunately. Now, as we look at the scriptures, we find that there are certain caution flags that Christ gave to us. So Christ said that we can discern the signs of the end of the age. That's one reality we have to keep in mind. We can discern that if we understand what they are. Now, it's not going to tell us the exact timing of things, but we're going to be able to discern where we're at in time. When it comes to prophecy, it's interesting about these prophetic cautions, and these cautions are laid out for us in one particular place, in several places, but one of them is found in Matthew chapter 24. And so the disciples, Christ is coming to the end of his life, and right before the end of his life, Christ tells them that this wonderful temple, this magnificent temple that we're all looking down on from the Mount of Olives, is going to be left standing. Not a stone is going to be left standing. It's all going to go away. And their question was, Master, tell us the signs of your coming and the end of the age. So they ask him that question. So what was the first response that Christ gave as a result of that question? What did he tell them? It's interesting to look at what he told them. He says to them, do you not know, anyway, take heed that no one deceive you. That was his first response to their question. Take heed that no one deceive you. Because as you think about that first point we made about Ephesians 4, that's talking about being blown about with every wind of doctrine? Well, when you are deceived, you're in the process of being blown about with every wind of doctrine. What's true? What's right? Where are we at? And Christ says, take heed that no one deceive you. So Christ is saying, basically, pay attention. Pay attention. Don't let anyone deceive you. So if he said that, he's telling all of us and all of God's people through the ages that there are people that are going to come across to try to deceive us. That's just the reality of living in this world. Take heed that no one deceives you. And as I said, it indicates that there is the potential of being deceived. Matthew chapter 24, verse 5. Matthew 24, verse 5. As part of this statement about avoiding being deceived, he says, "For many will come in my name, saying, 'I am the Christ,' and will deceive many. For many will come in my name, saying, 'I am the Christ,' and will deceive many." Now, does that mean that, you know, let's think about it. If somebody shows up here and says, "I am the Christ," how much credibility are you going to give that person? Shows up, "I am the Christ." Now, I've never had anybody in recent years come up and make that declaration. When we lived in St. Louis, there was an individual that showed up and said he was the Christ. So we all doubted him. And so we just said, I didn't see any, you know, his coming in the air, didn't hear any trumpets or any of that. But he said he was the Christ. So we're like, I don't think so. So anyway, but you had people that would come along, and if somebody walked into our congregation and said that, we would be doubting whether they're telling us the truth. They may be deceived and really believe that, but it's not Christ. Christ isn't just going to drive up, park out front, and walk in here and tell us that, okay? If he comes in through the roof, then I'm with you, but probably not in any other circumstance. But that's what he said. So it's not really the point that Christ is making is not somebody's going to say that he is the Christ. What he's saying is people are going to come in among you and they're going to represent themselves as servants of Christ. They're going to come, "I am a servant of Christ and I am a minister of Christ," and they're going to come in and they're going to try to sell themselves to you based on that. So when they say, "I'm a servant of Christ," okay, we can buy that. We can buy that. So you're a servant of Christ. And then how do you deal with it going forward? You know, all sorts of people say that they're servants of Christ. So the question is, how do you sort that out? So if they say they represent Christ, okay, fine. But we have to be somewhat skeptical. You say you represent Christ? Well, okay, let's hear it. In what way do you represent Christ? What do you teach? And then, as we'll see, we're to discern whether they are. We want to hear what you believe and what you teach, and we want to listen to it. And because we know we have the Bible, what is the Bible? It is our measure. So they can say that, but then we've got to measure them by the Scriptures. We've got to measure them by the Scriptures. And so, you know, as you look at the world and you look at what the world believes, they've got all kinds of things that they believe that we don't necessarily believe. For instance, it's commonly believed that Jesus, that in the garden, what was the fruit? Wasn't it an apple? Was it really an apple? Where does it say it's an apple? I don't think so. We don't know. We don't know. How about the three wise men? Is that biblical? Why do we say that? Because there were three different gifts, but it doesn't say there were three men. What about a whale swallowed Jonah? Was it a whale? No, it was a large fish. Doesn't say it was a whale. Could have been. but it doesn't say that specifically. How about money is the root of all evil? Is that true? No. Money is a root of evil. It's not the only root of evil, but it is a root of evil. But the way people say it, sometimes they believe it's biblical. For instance, is cleanliness next to godliness? Is that in the Bible? No, it's not. So there are things that people believe about the Bible that aren't necessarily true. So if we have the Bible, we should be able to discern what is true and what isn't. For instance, I believe that you had to eat unleavened bread every Sabbath. When I came in the church, that's what I believed, because for some reason I got that idea. So when I went to Ambassador College, and this guy had gone into Big Sandy and gotten a hamburger, he came walking into the dorm and he said, "Yeah, I went into town, got a hamburger." And I'm like, "You can't do that. You can't eat leaven on the Sabbath." And he said, "Where did you get that?" And I said, "Well, from the Bible." So he challenged me, and being basically a biblical illiterate, I started looking through my Bible. I didn't have a concordance or anything, so I couldn't look it up. But I came to find out that I was wrong, that was my impression, but I didn't have it correct. So eventually I came to understand when the days of unleavened bread took place and when we were to avoid leaven and when it didn't matter. But we can have these ideas that we believe to be biblical, but they're not biblical, in fact, once we start looking at them. Christ is saying, when he talks about being deceived, he says, "Watch out, because there are people who will come in a position that you would assume represents me, but in reality, by what they're teaching, they don't represent me. So you need to verify that." And as Christ goes on to say in Matthew chapter 24, he speaks of the fact that for false Christ and false prophets will arise and show great wonders so as to deceive, if it were possible, even the very elect. So there are going to be people that are going to greatly influence people on this earth, and they're going to powerfully influence them. And it tells us here that a large number of people on this earth are going to be deceived, but the elect will not be. And they're the elect because they have God's Spirit, because they've studied their Bibles, and they know how to discern the times. So they know how to look at what's going on and to discern the times. And so if we are the elect, truly the elect, then we should know. We should know the answers to these things. And as they do miracles, is that an indication that they are from God? They're going to do some astounding miracles between now and the end of the age. So should we say, "Well, look at the miracles they did. This is obviously somebody who's representing God." Is that true? A miracle does not necessarily indicate that they're representing God. They may be representing the God of this world instead of God himself. So if they do a miracle, okay, that's pretty good, but what do they teach? That you can measure against the Bible. Because if they're true to the Bible, they will teach what the Bible teaches, and they won't be leading you in a different direction than you should go. So just because something supernatural is done does not indicate that they're from God. So you have to look at not only what they do, you got to look at their fruits, and you got to look at what they teach, as we'll see here. So in the Matthew 24 area, there are caution flags. Flags flying that Christ said we need to pay attention to. Know them and pay attention to them. And he tells us to take heed so that no one deceives us, and realize that there are deceivers out there. We are to have our guard up and somebody comes along, what are they teaching? Now, let's go to another flag that the Apostle John brought out in 1 John chapter 4. 1 John chapter 4, beginning in verse 1. 1 John chapter 1. 1 John chapter 1. And he gives us some instruction about how we are able to discern a false prophet from a true prophet. 1 John chapter 1. In that verse, he says, "Beloved, do not believe every spirit. Do not believe every spirit. But test the spirits whether they are of God, because many false spirits have gone out into the world." So they're out in the world, and they are seeking to influence people. And they are, we are to be aware that that's going on, and we are to be able to measure them, to discern whether they are representing God or not. So God, you know, John's saying, don't believe the spirit that motivates all of those prophets. Because there is a spirit that may be motivating those prophets, but it's a spirit that we don't want anything to do with. So put them to the test, he says. Test the spirits whether they are of God. So the testing process is not something that you're, you know, going to get a battery tester out and go out there and see if, well, let's see what kind of energy is flowing through them. You can't do that. So when you have to test the spirit, it may take some time. So you begin looking at them, and you seek to try to discern where they're coming from, what they're teaching. And if you look at them and you pray to God about the situation, God will lead you to understand. Lead you to understand so that you can rightly discern whether they are true servants of God or not. Consider the Ephesian congregation in Revelation chapter 2. The Ephesian congregation and people in that particular era of the church had to deal with false apostles. They had to deal with people that said they were apostles, but were they apostles in reality? So what did they do? Revelation chapter 2, verse 2 says, "And you have tested those who say that they are apostles and are not, and have found them to be liars." So they tested them, they looked at what they had to say, and they came to realize these people aren't preaching the truth of the Bible at all. In fact, they're liars, and they're seeking to lead us astray. And then they were rejected, but they tested them, and that's exactly what we have to do as well. So if somebody comes and says, "I represent Christ," okay, that's good, but what are you teaching? And then look at what they're teaching. And they say, "Well, I can do a miracle." Well, let's do it. Let's see what you got. But that doesn't indicate that they really are God's representatives, so we have to be careful. One religious author rose to prominence when he wrote a whole series of books that sold 65 million copies. For a whole series of books, and sold a lot of books. And the books were written as fiction. But do you think that 65 million group, that group of 65 million believed that what he was writing was fiction? I don't think so. I think they bought what he said. And that series that sold 65 million books was called the Left Behind series. Left Behind. And the basic premise of Left Behind is the rapture. Okay, is the rapture true? Hopefully you know, because it isn't true. It isn't true. But it's something we should know. So if somebody puts that theory before you, you have to say, "I don't think so." And you have to realize sometimes people will be very convincing, and that was the whole problem with the challenges that we faced back in 1995. They subtly put things forward and suddenly undermined the truth, and you had people that bought into what they were saying, sadly. And the thing is, and to me, it took some time to sort it out. Now, the smarter people in the church, they did sort it out. It took me a while to sort it out. Eventually, I did, but it took a while. So you've got to hang on. You've got to go to God and pray to God and ask God to show you what's right, what's wrong, what's the proper path forward. And there are some things that we should, so I can just tell you now, if you hear the word rapture, it's not true. It is not a biblical doctrine. It's something that people have put together that's not accurate. And if you hear that, you can say, okay, I don't even have to waste my time thinking about this. You should know the answer, but don't be taken in by it. So just because they've sold a lot of books and people believe in it, that's not the direction we want to go. And as you look at different commentaries endorse this and promote this particular idea. Commentaries that are good in many ways, but they'll talk about Christ's return as being the rapture. Well, it's not. It's not accurate at all. So we have to try the spirits or put them to the test and make them pass the grade. Stand them up against the only proper measuring device that we have, and that's the Bible. Measure them. Is it accurate? Does it fit with the Bible? In addition to Christ and John, Peter also raised a couple of flags that we should be aware of. The Apostle John also raised a couple of flags, and he lays these out beginning in chapter 2 of 2 Peter. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 1. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 1. There it says, "But there were also false prophets among the people, even as there will be false teachers among you, who will secretly bring in destructive heresies, even denying the Lord who bought them, and bring on themselves swift destruction." So Peter says, there will be false prophets. There are false prophets. There will be false prophets. There have always been false prophets that have come on the scene. And we have to be aware of them. We're not going to mention this today, but if you go back to Paul's time, when he was leaving Ephesus, what did he tell them? He said, there are going to be false prophets from among you who are going to ravage the flock and lead people astray by what they're teaching. People that you go to church with are going to do this. So I'm not asking for everybody to be paranoid and all of that, but you have to realize there are people that rise up and will teach you false things or seek to lead you astray to follow false things. So let's look at what Peter has to say. He says there about the false prophets, and there will be false teachers among you who will secretly bring in destructive heresies, even denying the Lord. In fact, some of the people that are talked about by Peter are denying the resurrection, denying that Jesus Christ is going to return. I mean, if you deny that Jesus is going to return, you reject that premise, there's no point. We need to just quit right now because he's not coming back. So that's a fundamental premise. If anybody offers you that idea, you got to say, sorry, you don't know what you're talking about. And we firmly believe that he is coming back. He goes on to say in verse 2, "And many will follow their destructive ways, because of whom the way of truth will be blasphemed. By covetousness they will exploit you with deceptive words. For a long time their judgment has not been idle, and their destruction does not slumber. So I said to you, in the church of God, we find a body of believers who are not easily susceptible to miraculous signs and wonders as religious people in general. Also, the body of Christ has sufficient core of solid understanding of doctrine that helps to serve as a shield against false doctrines." So you've been taught things for years and years and years. Do you know what we've taught? And so if you hear something that deviates from that, you're like, wait a minute, that's not right. And be able to make a judgment. It says, so we have to realize that this is a reality that we're warned about. So what issue did Peter put on the table that was new to the discussion about false prophets? What did he say? They will seek to make merchandise of God's people. They will seek to make merchandise of God's people, and they will seek to lead you astray. It says in the New King James Version, "By covetousness, they will exploit you with deceptive words." So why are they putting deceptive words out there as though they were representatives of Christ. It's to exploit you as the people of God because they see you as a commodity by which they can make a living. So they're putting out false doctrines, they're promoting false doctrines, and they see you as a commodity that is going to provide money for them. And they want people in the church to follow them. As we look at the church in this particular time, are there any other churches of God besides the United Church of God? There are lots of different groups calling themselves the Church of God. We're just one of them. And there are churches calling themselves the Church of God that legitimately and faithfully serve the brethren in their congregation. And sadly, there are those that they're not serving their people well. They see them as just people that they can exploit. And Peter tells us, hey, be careful. Be careful because those people are out there. So if they tell you to let them open your wallet in some way, you have to think about, okay, are they motivated by money? And if they are, then you have to say, I don't think I'm going to go there. You know, there are some people who tell you to come join them and just send me your wallet. I'm not interested in you joining me at all. So you have to be careful. There are people that will exploit you. In 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 3, it talks about their ways were described as destructive, and the fruit of those ways was to cause the real way of truth to be blasphemed. So what does that tell you? They profess to be representatives of Jesus Christ, but the way that they live is not Christian. In fact, as people look at them, people would say, if this is Christianity, I want nothing to do with it. And we've had that happen in our time. You've had that happen in our time. They seek to get you to follow them, but their conduct is not Christian conduct. In fact, as they eventually get caught, you know, they basically undermine the name of God and make Christianity look bad. That's why the way of God is blasphemed, because of their behavior. So as you look at somebody and they're not living according to the scriptures, you've got to say, I don't think I'm going to join this guy. And you've had those people around. You've had Jim and Tammy Baker and how they flim-flam people. You've had different ones come along, and they've given Christianity a bad name. And as you look at people evaluate Christianity, to whom do they look to evaluate whether Christianity is true? They go to the very bottom of the barrel. This is Christianity. I want nothing to do with it. And sadly, they can find those people. But we are not perfect and never have been perfect, but we've sought to honor God and to teach God's truth. Have we gotten it right in every instance? No. We're hopefully walking humbly before God, and where we need to be corrected and move on in a positive way. So Peter said, watch out for false teachers who will produce two fruits. One of them is they will make merchandise of the people, and two, they will give Christianity a bad name. And we have those people, sad to say. So we have seen in Matthew 16, just as to rehab, go through this and cover the points we've covered today, what we've seen so far, we saw that Ephesians says that we ought to be anchored by the instruction that we receive in the church from the ministry that allows us to be solid, allows us to be able to walk in God's way of life and not be blown about by every wind of doctrine. And we will see more of that, I think, as we draw close to the end of the age. And you have to realize that's coming. And you have to evaluate, okay, what's this guy saying and why is he saying it? We've seen in Matthew 16 that we need to be able to discern the time signs of the times. Christ said we should be able to do that. So what time are we in? What time are we in? I don't see a sign that indicates that Christ is coming immediately. Is Christ coming? I believe that. Is he going to come in my lifetime? I believe that. But you know, I've been running my race since 1972, and he's not here yet. Some of you have been running it longer than I have. Does that mean he's not coming? No, that just means we've not lived to the point where Christ is going to come. And we can be assured, the Bible reassures us that he will come. There's just no doubt about it, because as you look at the fulfillment of the prophecies all the way back to the time of Adam and Eve, they've been fulfilled, and they will be fulfilled, and there will come a day when Christ will return and we will rise from the dead or rise as flesh to meet him in the air. We saw that in Christ's answer in Matthew 24 that we have to be careful of being deceived. We saw how John and 1 John put all the teachings to the acid test. So if somebody comes and teaches something that you're not familiar with, you need to look in the scriptures and say, well, is this true? Is this accurate? Are they properly quoting and preaching the truth of God? We saw that Peter said there are people that are going to come and they are going to seek to make merchandise of you. So if somebody is looking at you as a way to get tithes or to get money, you got to say, I don't think this is the right path. Or they're living, not living up to the standard of God. In fact, they're besmirching the name of Christ by the way that they're living. So there are caution flags, as I said, and we need to be aware of those things. Not only be aware of the signs of the end, but also be looking for those caution flags and don't be taken in by them. So I hope that this will give you some prophetic keys by which you can judge prophecy. It's not all of them, and we'll pick up and cover more of them next week. So hopefully these will at least give you something in your arsenal to be able to make a judgment and discern God's way of life and the truths of prophecy. So we'll pick this up next week, and thanks everybody for your attention, and please have a great remainder of the Sabbath day, and have a good week ahead.